It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. God Journey. Hot season in Southern California.
Yeah, it's like roasting out here, dude.
Probably not as bad as some places back east and other places that we're here.
That is true, and we usually have a dry heat, but it's roasty toasty. It's not your favorite weather.
I came back from Australia, which is just the cusp of spring. I mean, it's cool, it's great, and I forgot a coat. Can you believe it? I went to Australia with a coat, and yeah, it's a little cold some places, but I got by. A little borrowed stuff now and then, but yeah, I come back, and boy, it's just hot. Every day. It's hot in the morning. That's why I left the San Joaquin Valley to come here. And it's not working for me this week.
Well, it's probably not as hot here as it is there.
No, it's a little warmer there. You're right. You're right. So but for some reason, when you have to live in L.A.
You got to look for those little mercies there, brother.
The good side of being in L.A. is cool weather in the morning. Fog, overcast, that stuff.
Come on.
But no, it's not getting any of that.
So you're entering your time zone here, it's hot, but you had a wonderful time in Australia.
Yeah, I'm still, as we record this, only 2 days back, so we're kind of time warping yet again into the future because of some travel you've got going on, which is nice.
Yes.
Instead of me, I'm glad I'm going to be home for a little bit here. But yeah, I'm still kind of working through that, but, you know, this heat's supposed to break over the weekend, so I'm praying it does. That'd be great.
And you had a chance to reconnect with some of your buddies back in Australia.
Yeah, it was strange. On this trip, I was set up not to see anybody I had previously met. I mean, I wasn't.
Really?
And I've been in a lot of places, but a lot of the folks I know in Perth or in Melbourne, and those two places I didn't get to on this trip. And Kevin and Val Smith have been close friends of mine for 15, 16 years. And we've not crossed paths for 2 or 3 years. Last I saw him, he was in Europe, and I was there. So I was thinking, man, it's hard. I was thinking, as I was going around Australia, I'm thinking, it's really hard to be this close to know they're right over there, but right. The schedule was just not going to allow me to get there. So I Skyped him one morning. I was from Adelaide and just said, Kevin, what's up? You know, and we talked. He's almost always on Skype, so we did some talking. And he said, you know, I'm thinking about flying up to Sydney. I said, what? And he couldn't come up for any of the weekend stuff. He said, I can come up Sunday night. He had a wedding, and they were moving. I mean, it was just not the time. I was originally going to go to Melbourne, but then he just said, you know, it's not the time. We're just really busy here. But decided he was going to fly up. So Sunday night, he flies up to Sydney. And Sunday night, I was speaking out in DY at a young congregation of fairly hungry people, but it's a bit of a revivalist congregation, so not my favorite venue.
You didn't go light the match strike?
No, it was already lit. I was trying to throw a little water on it. No, kidding. But really engaged with the message of God's love. I mean, it was so fun to be among him and talk about that. But then he flew in Sunday night. We connected about a little afternoon on Monday. And we had about 24 hours just sitting around a hotel together and having a shot of grace and life before we went back to the airport. He flew to Melbourne and I flew home. So I got a chance to talk to him, and we thought we'd do some recording, too. So I got a chance to record a bit of a podcast with him.
Oh, cool.
So we thought we'd do is go ahead and let that be the rest of this podcast. And just we'll play Kevin out to the end, and then we'll say goodbye. And then actually we'll probably talk about it next week.
All right.
Just the last day here in Australia before I head home, and this is kind of a surprise. I hadn't expected to see you on this trip.
Ah, that's right. Well, it's a good thing to do.
Oh, it was great. I'm glad you flew up here and just had a chance to connect for a day before I head home.
Yeah.
It's been a wonderful time here in Oz. Met lots of... I was thinking on this whole trip, I probably wouldn't meet anybody I knew previously, but a couple of guys showed up that I knew in Sydney here. Other than that, it's been you. So three people I've known before.
Goodness.
Coming to this trip. But we've had Kevin on a number of times on the podcast sharing some of his journey, so I thought it'd be great just to kind of catch up with you again. And gosh, we're probably 5 or 6 years since the last, or 4 or 5 years since the last time we recorded something. How's the journey going for you?
Well, it's been an adventure every day. And it hasn't always been, you know, all beer and Skittles. It hasn't been something that, you know, you can say...
All beer and Skittles?
Yeah.
I think we know that back home, but you know, I think people will pick it up.
It hasn't been just an easy road.
No, last year's been particularly... some challenges.
One of the problems with getting older, you sort of your bodies don't work as well as they did in days gone by. But to be honest, the interesting thing is that I feel incredibly happy and replete in spite of the struggles of the last 12 months or so. But more than that, I think the thing I've grown is just seeing that what God has done in our lives, in the life of my wife and I, and in people around us, has just been something that's been, it's been a great sense of peace, God's peace that passes understanding, the Bible talks about. And that sort of sense has been there. Because through all the struggles of our life, the interesting thing is we learned that actually God's action is there, and it doesn't depend on us to make it happen. We don't have to press buttons. We just have to live faithfully as best we know. We can even make a mess of it, and we can go back to God and know His forgiveness. And that's fantastic.
Yeah, one word that comes to mind when I'm always with you is just complete contentedness as your life unfolds. And like you've downsized recently your housing. You've been through some difficult conflicts in family, and yet there's just a contentedness about how your life unfolds. And where does that come from?
Well, I think it really comes from him, because I think the thing that I learned early was to trust Jesus and to know him, and to know him intimately, but not try and be a manipulator of the situation, but just to be able to rest and relax in him. And I think the thing he taught us was that when we move with him and we sort of have a sense of his direction, and we roll along with it, we find that some of the best decisions are made. And really we have to say, how did we make those decisions? And we often look back and think, well, I think God moved us in that. We didn't go around looking for that. We were just looking to live today.
Did it feel at times like you were almost making a decision on a whim?
Well, I think that's true, yeah. Well, one day, just not long ago, I drove down the street near where my daughter lives, and there was a house for sale. And I just had this funny whim that thought, you should go and look at that house, because I think that might be just for you. And I thought, that's crazy. Someone told me, never live next door to your kids. They want you to do too much. But I thought, no, that's not right. So I went and looked at the place, and I went home and talked to my wife, and we said, yeah, we shouldn't go for that. Now, it was an amazing, we couldn't afford it, we didn't think. But when we sold our house, we actually could afford it. And then we've been able to move there and moved from a big house down to a smaller house and find a sort of, just feel like a snug closeness. That we just sort of say, Lord, you've done amazing things here. And it isn't because we're special, it's because we're ordinary. And it's what God wants for all his people. And it's really a matter of actually learning to listen to him and learning to, you know, not get so busy with the things that you're doing that you don't actually reflect on what he's saying, what he wants and what he desires. And so in the whole process of that, it was just one thing after another opened out, and we looked at it at a time when houses weren't selling, our house sold immediately. At a time when houses were costly, the house we were buying was knocked down to a level we could afford it. We didn't bargain with it. It wasn't the issue. They offered it to us. And we look at it and you think, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And now I look back on my life and think, that's one of the things I learned just from trusting him in little things. And it's amazing how small things you do teach you a basis of walking with him. And I realise that getting out of religion has helped me, because it's no longer a religious relationship. It's a relationship.
Talk about that a little bit. What would you say is a religious relationship?
Where I feel as if I've got to somehow please God and do everything in particular sorts of ways that people think are the way you do it, so that you can keep him happy, sort of thing.
So to hear God, you may have to have a 3-hour quiet time every morning at 6 a.m. or 4 a.m.
I wouldn't be good at that.
Yeah.
But that's right. And so instead of going through the motions like that, you walk along and you just... We really just commit our day to the Lord and walk through it. And there's times we talk to him lots and lots. Sometimes we don't talk to him anywhere near as much. Sometimes we're rolling along and we realise we really haven't stopped and talked to God about this at all. And really, we saw that really talking to God was a matter of, you know, we had to get out of our head the idea of prayer. Because the word prayer, while it had its meaning back in the past, the idea of making requests and coming to God that way. That's right, but we saw that what in Jesus what had happened is God had opened the door for us to be friends of God and co-heirs with Christ. And you say, wow. And so that our relationship with him is we go to him with a level of acceptance.
And you just it's like he just unfolds his way as you just walk through life together in a very ordinary way. It's not a super spiritual prayer and begging and having all these rituals
and saying, God, I really need a new house. So we never say that. We didn't say that at all. We wouldn't even think of that. We said, well, we think you put us here, Lord, so we're going to stay here till you move us.
Hmm.
It's not our desires that really are high in our thinking. It's we're very happy to be where we are, and we're happy to go when it's time to go.
Hmm.
And living freely in the Spirit is really part of that. But I think the other thing that's interesting is that we really learnt that we're very good at talking to God often, but very not all that good at listening.
Hmm.
And a man came to see me one day, and he talked about things that had happened in his family, and he said that his father had been a very special person, and as a foolish young man, he'd gone away, and he'd become a very successful bank manager and done all sorts of things, but he said, I've missed something somewhere. And he said, there was something in our home that was unique. And he said, I've seen some of it around the place, and I want to know what is, what is it, and how do you get it? And we talked, and I talked to him a bit, and I said, well, go and talk to him. He said, I don't know how to. I said, well, I've always believed if you want to talk to God, there are places in your life where you feel very comfortable. You feel a spiritual happiness, if I can put it that way. And you go to a place like that. And he told me he had a valley on in his farm that was just, he said, I could be there all day. Not a problem. I said, well, go back there, sit down and talk to God. Talk to God about the things that are on your heart. Talk to him, with respect. And recognize that God is God and you're you. And you're coming by his grace into his presence. Yarn out things, and then when you're finished, be quiet for a while. Just listen. Listen to what he says. He won't talk to you in words most probably. Sometimes he does. But in fact, often, it's an impression or a sense, and you think, yes, I should do that. And I said, just listen. And, he came back and he said to me, oh, amazing. He said, talk to me. And that's gone on. And you sort of say, that's sort of our experience. That you sort of say there's a place where you're replete. And we find that in our home. And we've been, sit down quietly in the corner of our home and just be still before God. And it's lovely.
Hmm. I like that idea of where you feel a sense of, I didn't say beauty, but a sense of joy. And even a physical place, whether it's a room in your house, a chair in your house, walk a spot in the garden or walk on a hill. I mean, I've always had those places in my life changed because I've moved a lot. So
yeah,
it's not always the same.
And they do change because they're not the same. And you can't set up a ghetto there.
Yeah, a little grotto with
a
statue and some candles.
It's really a matter of years ago when we moved up to live in the bush. I was driving along the road, and every time I went past a particular part, I used to say to my family, "This is the loveliest bit of bush in Australia." And they used to say, oh, Dad, come on, But I still held that idea. And it's interesting that it always felt like that to me.
Mm.
And I don't know what it was. It was no different than any other bit of bush in Australia. And it might have had a few things that made it unique, but it was nothing startling. And then when we had a sense God said, go and buy a property, I said, develop the place to go to start there.
Mm.
So we went there, and it was just round the corner, a couple of kilometres away, we found exactly the property that we lived on for the next 20 years.
Mm.
And it wasn't mystical. It was just that as I go along, there's some places that I feel very happy in. In my spirit, I feel comfortable. There's some places in my spirit I feel uncomfortable. And I don't go back to those places in a hurry.
Mm.
But the interesting thing is that place now, I go through it where the trees were there, I go through it quite often. And it doesn't hold any great enthrall to me today.
Hmm.
It's changed.
Yeah, because it's not the place.
No.
It's just how God makes himself known. And
in that moment.
Yeah. And where he does that. And recognizing there are places in our life that are pleasant. And not just in the personal, I like it, it's my kind of deal. But in the sense that there's something more real here.
Yes, it's a deep-centered thing.
Yeah.
That, And it seems to me that we've one of the problems we have as Christians is we haven't, especially in the Western world, we've lost the track of living out of our spirit. And the result is that we often push back a sense of, oh, this is a nice place to be, and we say, oh, that's silly. Yeah. My mind says that's just the same bit of bush as anywhere else, but there is something about it that's different. And I think that in life there are places like that that God gives you, and there are places to be still. And sit on a log somewhere and talk to God is lovely.
Yeah, and you mentioned not being prayer. What do you mean by that? Not getting caught up in the...
Well, if when I was a boy, I was taught that prayer starts with praise and then with confession and then adoration and then supplication. And if you get that right, you'll be right. And so you try to shape prayers to be in a sort of a way rather than... I like the old song, the old hymn of the church that said, prayer is the heart's sincere desire, uttered or unexpressed, the notion of a hidden fire that burns within the breast. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, prayer is very much an expression of my heart towards God. And in fact, often how I pray tells me a bit of how I am.
Mm-hmm. If we slip into formal prayers, it's almost a thing that we're just praying out of our head again. We're trying to fit a format.
That's right.
And then at the end of it, we're hoping to hear God. But mostly, we haven't put ourselves in the frame of heart and mind that really allows us to recognize what he might be saying.
Exactly right. And so that effectively, rather than working out of my spirit, I actually begin to work out of my mind again.
Yeah.
And that's, how I approach life. It's true of relationships with people. If you're going to relate to people around you, you go to people and you meet them in your spirit first.
Mm.
And, I was telling you that last night about a couple who come to live near us. And I went over to see them for 5 minutes and stayed for 3 hours. And the minute I met them, our spirits just met. And all of a sudden we found, as we got to know each other, we found there were a whole lot of things where God had taken us on adventures, very different. He from a very formal Catholic position, us from a crazy Protestant one. But the interesting thing was we found a unity that was able to go further and to be able to look at the questions that we'd never looked at in each other's life, in the history. And I think that happens often. But I think the first thing you do is meet people with your spirit.
Yeah, and recognize there are people you pass by or even meet, and you might have a great conversation, and you might really... I mean, I think I've had lots of wonderful conversations with people, but you don't sense a connection that's going beyond this moment.
That's right.
And other people go away from that going, I'd like to cross paths with them again. And you don't have to orchestrate it, but somehow God will arrange you to cross paths again.
And that's the key, and stay free enough to be able to do it. Because the danger is, number one, say, that was so good to meet that person, I'm going to go put myself in, I'll go on that street again just to see if I can see him.
Yeah.
At that point, you're manipulating the scene. Leave it in God's hand. Leave yourself, you say, here's the King of all creation, the Lord of lords and the King of kings. Well, allow him to be that by living your life, what he calls you to do faithfully. That is, as a person making decisions about your life right now.
Yeah.
And leave the rest to him.
But some people just say, that sounds so risky to me.
Wonderfully risky. Old John Wimber used to say, faith is spelled R-I-S-K. And I think there's a truth in that. I don't think it is a risk. It just appears a risk. Because there's no risk in something that you're confident of. And if you're confident that God has looked after you many, many times, again and again, you take the risk and you say, yes, there's a risk involved in this, however I'll go there. Not a risk.
You see this misused by people?
Yeah, I think that, you get people who really want to just be indecisive themselves, and so what they'll do is they'll say, well, I can't do this, but I'll just have a fling and see what goes on. And I think that really basically I think what we do is humans is we see things that God does and try and emulate them and make them happen again, and we try to sort of work them for what we can. It's not a working situation. It's not something where you pull strings. It's to do with a person just continuing to learn to walk with God. Well, I haven't got it together. I've been a Christian for many years, but there's many things I don't know. But more than that, there's places where I fail. And the interesting thing is that God's sort of care for me covers my failure. Mm. And, you know, I love the line, you know, I have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ, the righteous one. And I know he's there. If I make a blunder, he's there for me. And even if I'm intentional about my blunder, people say, oh, that can't be. But God's grace is greater than my sin. And so therefore I can live my life with confidence, not in me, but in him. And it's not a confidence, a theoretical confidence, it's a practical confidence.
Hmm. I got an email this week from, actually it was a Facebook comment, but a pretty angry man. His niece is married to a man who he says spouts Wayne Jacobson-isms all the time, sits at home waiting for God to deliver a boatload of money to his house, doesn't work, his niece is working after she's just survived cancer. This guy's really, really angry, and he's really blaming me. He's obviously learned this, I'm going to sit home and wait for God to help me win the lottery or something. What would you say to a man like that?
I'd say he's supposed to be right to be angry.
No, not him. I mean the guy who's just sitting at home.
The guy sitting at home.
He thinks he's trusting God. He's committing one of these blunders. You know, but he maybe well-intentioned. I don't know. I don't know the man at all. Maybe well-intentioned. Maybe he's just lazy and using God as an excuse. I don't really know.
Well, all those things could be true, couldn't they? But the thing is, if you're sitting still and if the world around you is saying something's wrong, look, because there usually is something wrong. It may not be what the person says is wrong, but there'll be something that's out of whack.
Hmm.
Because in actual fact, all of us are called to live under God and to take our part in the society, in the community. And people sitting on their tails doing nothing, really, they become a load on the community. And if God tells you to be still, be still. But be sure he's told you to be still, and you're not just suffering with laziness or indecision. In Australia, we have a great problem because many people have made decisions that have taken them on crooked courses. And so what they do is they become passive to everything. And they won't make decisions at all. Men, especially in Australia, are bad at this. But, you know, you say, come around for dinner. Well, might not. You know, they're sort of indecisive to the extreme.
Hmm.
And double-minded. And the result is that basically there are some people who do that and blame that on God. But actually, God always calls you to a place where you don't want to use the word serving, because I think we often think we're a great army of people serving God, and the answer is we are by living. But in actual fact, we don't have to go and do little tricks for God. What we've got to do is live constantly in relation to him and get on with the things he's got. The most important thing would be a bit of advice that came from one of the church fathers a long time ago, who said, if you want to do what God wants, this is my paraphrase, if you want to do what God wants, do the next faithful thing you've got to do. And if that's putting out the garbage, put it out. If that's cleaning the toilet, clean the toilet. If that's talking to the Queen, talk to the Queen. But do the next faithful thing you've got to do. And basically, it's brilliant advice.
Hmm. Let me ask you about this. You were a pastor for a season, editor of a magazine, publisher, founder, I guess, of the magazine. It was pretty big here in Australia. You've led camps and traveled and taught lots of things to lots of people. Mm. You're one of the men I value in the world that I get to cross paths with now and then and glean the wisdom of your journey. And yet, you seem to be in a place where you're not having a lot of space to share that with others. You're not podcasting. You've written books, but you're not writing any these days. I think so many people I know would be very uncontented, feeling like I've got things to share and no place to share it. I love the way you settle. I mean, you say a year where you haven't done much of that kind of thing other than you're just engaging the people around you. Mm. And I'm sure bringing great help and joy to their lives. Hmm. How have you reached that place of contentedness, just even in things you were a part of before that, I don't know, maybe you enjoyed, didn't enjoy, and those opportunities not being here in the same way? Talk about that with me. I'm not even sure what the question is. But
yeah, well, I think, to be honest, I think that, you know, I certainly miss some of the sort of interesting and unusual sort of things that God's given me to do over the years. But I came to a place where I saw that Well, first of all, I got sick, and when I had an open heart surgery, that stopped me from doing
it. That kind of stops a few things.
Is it like a hit in the head with a barge pole? But the interesting thing is that I found that God was there with me, and I didn't feel cut off from the things that had gone on, because I saw God still doing things, and I didn't see it as my task or my. I was not the prima donna in any way. I got about things, I did them, and that was it. But others were doing it, and God's doing His work. And I see that happening, and I feel excited by what God's doing. In a messed up world, we're seeing things that, quite a few years ago, we started talking about just the nature of what was happening in the church. And people didn't like to hear it, and they were very cross with us, some of us.
Hmm.
And I know you've shared some of that. And the interesting thing is that I've just watched it go more and more. It's moved faster than I thought it would. And I see that there are changes happening. You say, Lord, I feel privileged to be an observer of what's going on here. And so part of it is tied up with enjoying observing what God's doing. And I feel part of it even if I'm not involved.
Well, I think you're greatly involved, just not in a way that most people would value.
No.
Because I think I meet a lot of young guys, probably even older guys, who... You know, when they were pastors, when they were on a speaking circuit, whatever, they felt more valuable to God.
Mm.
And then they go through a bit of change where they realize how much of that was feeding something in them, less being what God asked them to be in. Then they get in a spot of living it better, but feeling like they have opportunity to share it less. And then there's that frustration I think a lot of people have is, how do I build an audience for, you know, it's kind of that old pastor mantle probably, how do I build an audience for myself?
Yeah, I think that's a promotional thing in men. We all like to do things, but I can't tell you why. But all I can say is, with the help of my wife and my dogs, and that's really, you know.
Now you're talking Sarah's language, that dog thing.
Well, you see, I had this little dog who, when I was cooked, sat next to me, slept when I slept, woke up when I went. And, you know, Val was busy doing things, but he was always there. And I just enjoyed it. I felt he was God's gift to me.
Mm.
And he is. And the interesting thing is that I learned just to sit still. And I had to stop doing things, so I did. And then I've had opportunities since then, but not a great number. Hasn't been like it was before. And I'm sort of glad. Mm. Because what I'm doing, I think, has got more depth. And more, you know, working with individuals is a lot more, it's just lovely, really. And
probably goes back to what you're saying about living out of our heads. We really tend to value the wrong things. And when we start living out of our heart and value what God values, then, and I like the peace and content of just letting this day unfold. If God's got a place for me to be, that's going to unfold. I don't have to go find it. I don't have to go manipulate.
No, and that's important, isn't it? Because, you see, part of what we do is we do manipulate subconsciously, even if not conscious, and we manipulate things to be beneficial for God. And God doesn't need that. That's one of the great problems that's been in the church. There's been all sorts of things being manipulated and saying, this is God, and saying, no, this is you. You've got an activity going on here. And I think God sometimes uses those things. I don't deny that. However, I think that what we've got to do is we've got to learn to have the confidence that says, Father is God, is the Lord of the universe, and He's not let go of anything. And so that effectively, when I see people saying, wow, what will happen to my children if we don't have Sunday school, if we don't have such and such, and say, just believe me, God has a way of doing it. And I've got three children, and my two older children experienced church life of a sort that we knew.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sort of drifted out of that sort of life into a different way of living. Rachel, our youngest daughter, she didn't have any of that. And she often felt a bit bereft that she'd missed out on something there. But the interesting thing is, what God has given her is something that didn't come through a teaching program, didn't come through meetings. It actually came through a relationship with Jesus and a struggle in life over things and seeing that, learning to rely on Jesus as the Lord of the universe. And so that effectively now she's got an understanding of the things of God that she's never been taught formally.
Hmm.
And often You know, she's not perfect either. I mean, she's my daughter, so that's part of the problem. Yeah. But the interesting thing is that there's a sort of she's got a contentedness with God's presence in her work, you know, in the things she does just to recreate and what have we, and I think I've seen evidence in our family life of the fact that God doesn't need the structures to enable children to grow a relationship with Him.
I think, in fact, the longer you learn to live with this growing confidence, what I hear you talking about, this growing confidence in God's ability to live alongside us in our lives and watch things unfold. I hear people who ask the question, how are my kids ever going to know God without Sunday school? And my answer usually is, where I'm at in this journey now, how are your kids ever going to learn to follow God if they go to a Sunday school? And God just becomes an idea. Mm-hmm. God becomes a manager of principles. Mm-hmm. Instead of, they really get to know God as their Father. Mm-hmm. And then the life is just this growing trust in His ability. That's right. That's where I see you becoming increasingly settled. There's just growing trust in God's ability to put you where you need to be without manipulating life to get there.
Yeah, you just know that He's got it together. And you say, I trust that, and I walk through it, and I find it's true. And that gives me confidence to get up tomorrow and end of the day.
That's great stuff.
It's a place of settledness. And, you know, when Paul said he really knew what it was to be in good things or bad things, to feel replete and to feel the comfort of being in God, I think that's something that we've begun to understand a little bit of. Just a fraction. And we live in a world where there's so many things changing and so many difficulties that are constantly being thrown up in the news cycle and what have we. And you can be very distressed about everything. But, you know, there's an interesting thing. If your confidence has grown, or if your confidence is in the person of God through His Son Jesus, then you can walk through anything. Because the peace of God does absolutely overwhelm and literally wash away the distress of a world system.
And that's infectious, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, I know it's been infectious with me as we've been together. You've gone around the world, met some of the people I know, and hung out with them. And that seems to come back the same thing, just that the sense of not necessarily being in a meeting and teaching, but you just being in someone's home 3 or 4 days or a week, or someone being in your home for 3 or 4 days, and not trying to disciple or mentor, just live life together and watch what God shows.
Exactly, because in the end, it is God who builds His church. And that's what, when Jesus says, I'll build my church, the gates of Hades won't stand against it. And so He's really basically saying, I'm the one who does it. Keep out of the way. And that's been one of our problems, isn't it?
It seems the thing we do hardest is to try and stay out of the way. I mean, that's a lot of this growing confidence, is you're not having to manipulate things because you feel like he's doing a better job than I can do on my best scheming.
Yeah. And there are places where you see God's action, you know, and in very ordinary things. I've always hated when people say, I'm going to go and pray for a parking spot. However, I'm amazed at how many times when I feel absolutely exhausted, or I've got pain in my body, and I drive to a place, I now go to wherever I'm going to go, I go directly to that place. And time after time, I find there's a place for me to be there. And I just see that as God's goodness. Sometimes I have to walk, and in those days I can. And so I think it's just amazing that God knows our need. He knows where we're at.
Which is the whole point of Matthew 6. We talked about the scripture last night. It's become a favorite of mine from Eugene Peterson, where he talks about don't be so preoccupied with getting that you can't respond to good giving. I think religion is all about how do I get a parking place? How do I get healing? How do I get?
Yeah.
And to live in the graciousness of a God who's already giving into my life the things that today needs.
And it's an everyday occurrence of reality.
Yeah, I love that.
And I just feel I feel so privileged to be able to walk with Jesus.
Mm.
And to me, as I think about it, I'm not very good at going to church. I'm not very good at sort of...
Very good. How do you know you're not very good? You haven't been in that sense of church
for a lot of years.
Well, decades perhaps.
but it's interesting because the lovely thing is that I mean, I love meeting with other Christians, and I like the same thing last night. One of the things that I miss most is being with big groups of people singing.
Mm.
because I can sing and don't get heard. That's really,
you like that. Good. Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, actually, that's the only thing that I miss about it. Because you never really met people there. Oh, you did if you went outside and had a cup of tea afterwards. But you know, what you were doing was actually going through the motions of something that you didn't really even wrap your brain around.
Yeah. And if that's what you like, there's lots of places to go in town and sing for 20, 30 minutes and then slip out before the sermon if you want to. I'm privileged to walk alongside Jesus, too, and I'm really privileged to walk alongside you. God's given us about 16 years of crossing paths now and then, and it's always a blessing.
Yeah, I don't think any of that was a happening, you know, by chance. I think God opens doors, and I think the more we walk quietly with Him, the more those doors open. And effectively, I don't look for them anymore, because I used to often think, well, I might see another Wayne Jacobson somewhere. But I've grown to love you over the years as a brother, and it's just lovely. But
you have to grow to love me. That's quite a challenge.
That's true. But I think that you've got great endurance, and you're actually just stuck with me. But I think the thing that's true is that as you walk along, you just somehow the idea I being in the place the Lord called me to be. This is what happened, and it strikes me that. You don't worry. I don't have to achieve anything.
It's such a different way to live. Because I think the old religious thing, it's not only exhausting, because you're doing lots of stuff to try and get God to do. And then God doesn't do what you manipulated Him to do, so that leaves to greater frustration.
Yeah.
And this way of just saying, okay, I'm just waking up today. God, what are you giving me today?
Yeah.
And not having this, you know, intense staring at everything around you. Just having your heart open and see what crosses your path.
And I think just walking with Him, he's looking for people. And so that I expect that today, as I wander along, I'll almost probably come across people who really Father wants me to have just a word with.
Hmm.
It might just be a smile, might be something more. And it happens time and time again, that you're walking into a situation and as you're there for a few seconds, you think, this is one of those special moments God's given us.
Yeah, but I know you well enough. You're not going through the airport with a bunch of tracks in your hand trying to win everybody to something else.
No, I did that once. Not quite at the airport, but I used to have tracks in my pocket when I was a 16-year-old. Fortunately, I think I soon saw that they were not really productive.
Wasn't helping.
Although, I'd have to say some people became Christians as a result of it. But see, the irony is, I say, you know, even if I got it wrong, the good part is God has a way of redeeming those situations, and you know.
Well, I wish I recorded all of our conversations over the last 20 hours or so, because we've had a wonderful time, and we get a little more time today before we have to catch some birds. You on a short flight? I'm on a fairly long flight. Yeah, but they'll be home. Sarah will be on the other side of that flight. So excited about
it. That's good.
Had a great time in this country. I'll tell you, I've seen a hunger sweeping this country that I have not seen before, from people all kinds of places and places where they're stuck and lost. And there was just an overwhelming sense of people hungering for something real and really realizing most of what they have is just sawdust.
Plastic.
It's not really doing in their hearts what they're hoping for. I'm really encouraged. I've seen a lot of hunger here more than any other time I visited. So. See what God does.
You get through. Thanks.
All righty, brother.
Good day.
Man, I was so blessed he came down there. Kevin's one of the brothers in this world I thoroughly enjoy just hanging out with.
Well, you know, I think it's fascinating to listen to you guys talk in terms of the whole contentedness that you sort of appreciate in him. That sense of not having to do or not having to manipulate. That is so foreign to our planet, though.
Isn't it?
It is. I mean, I'm listening and I go like, I get that in terms of the relational aspects, in terms of the way we're sort of taught to be responsible, industrious beings. That is just flipping all of that on its head.
Yeah, it is.
And I just go like, gosh, the business world doesn't function that way at all.
The religious world
doesn't function that way at all. There's just, it's like, I get it, because I can waft in moments where you're just going like, Lord, I see your hand. I sense what's going on. And I think he has, extricated from me this demand or this incessant need to do or make it happen. I get that. In terms of how you live that out, the rest of stuff, if you're not engaged in a dialogue with him, it's impossible to do what you're talking about.
It is, because on the one hand, either you fill that hole by working your tail off in your own deal.
You have no time to hear anything.
Or you just become a couch potato because I don't hear him, so I'm just trying to be contented, and that's not,
no,
that's not
the,
it.
The absence of relationship is not sitting there going like, well, you know, he'll just do it, because I'm going like, that's not who I know you to be. You're a very engaged person that is doing things that you're trying to discern that you're meant to do. You're very engaged in that. It's not, but there isn't the same anxiety of having to, I mean, you guys focused on that word manipulation a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you shift the responsibility onto me. It's my job to make it happen. And I think that's where it's like, no, that's exhausting. That yoke is going to rub you raw.
Somewhere there's this life that both Hebrews can describe as ceasing from your own labors and enjoying the rest of God. I mean, that's what Hebrews talks about.
Yeah.
And in Colossians, Paul talks about
labor
and striving more than any man. I mean, that's where Paul says.
Right.
So his workload wasn't necessarily a couch potato workload, but it wasn't in his own need to make something happen, rather seeking to follow what God put on his heart. That's where I hope to live. You know, I think some days I get that. Other days I panic and get lost, and I got to just do this on my own. And I think it's more and more, that's what I love about him, sitting there without, quote-unquote, any ministry opportunity in the way we think of it, in the way of, you know, writing, podcast, you know, just doing things that are part of his journey, and yet being incredibly effective with the people he's near, and incredibly at rest in this season of his life, not trying to make it happen.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when Jesus says, you know, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, you know, and I'll give you rest. Take upon my yoke. That's the thing that I'm going like, gosh, it was really helpful when someone, I think, helped me understand. It's not that you're plowing on your own and just take on his yoke, you know, like it's more like be yoked to him. And if we allow him to sort of be that more experienced lead ox, and I'm just walking in step, that burden is not very heavy. If I get out ahead of him, the whole weight load transfers on me. If I
just try and be contented with
that. and if I lag behind, then I start to chafe because I'm
drug along.
Yeah, and it's like, I think the whole reality is, because I mean, I listen to this, and I am not wired in a just sit there. That's not who God designed me to be. But at the same time, I appreciate the value of the rest and the being free from the need to make it happen, because that was such, I think, a religious yucky thing that was hard to get free from. To be in a place where you're going like, Lord, in the dialogue of knowing what you've called me to do and being in step with you, those things are harmonized in a way that is effective. It's not an absence of work. It's working with him, not apart from him.
And that's, I love Eugene Peterson's translation of that, and I will give you rest from Matthew 11. Come and learn from me the unforced rhythms of grace.
Yeah.
I see a brother who's learning to live in that, and a lot more we can talk about. In fact, why don't we do it next time? We'll kind of catch up on this, and it's one little clip more I've got from him, and we'll do that next week.
All right.
Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.